are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Brian Peacock, your host with you on this Monday edition, this mailbag Monday edition of the program. Still have tons of questions to get to in this offseason for the 49ers, a pivotal offseason going into 2019, year three of the Shanahan-Lynch regime. Big expectations and a few hiccups here in OTAs as far as players being on the field and healthy. So hopefully a lot of these players are getting ready for training camp, and I think there's some hand-wringing about that. But overall, a much improved roster, and we're going to get into everything 49ers that y'all wanted to hear about on today's show via email, questions from Twitter, Facebook. You can find me on Twitter at BD Peacock. You can email the show LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. Subscribe, rate, review the show on the new Himalaya podcast app. It's free, super easy to use, has every single podcast you love or are searching for, including all of the podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. A really cool feature of personally curated playlists made just for you by expert podcast tastemakers. You can also find the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Well, let's just get into that mailbag then, shall we? Let's start on Twitter. Got a question here from E. Olivares. He says, will Robbie Gould wear the captain's patch on his jersey this year? And some saltiness in the replies following that. I don't think Robbie Gould can wear the captain's patch if he's holding out, right? And especially if he's not part of the long-term deal. I think the captaincy, you want someone who's there. You want someone who's present, who's going to be there for a while. And maybe Robbie Gould's not that guy anymore. And even though he's going to be one of the best kickers in the league, and he's not going to hold out, I don't think, into the season or anything like that, I think he'll be around. He's sending a message. This is going to be his last year at the 49ers and then move on. And hopefully he's a really good kicker still for the 49ers this year. But yeah, I would guess if I had to put money on it, and if I was passing out captaincy patches, I would not give one to Robbie Gould. To Faithful 74, he says, I've been watching soccer for a year now, and I noticed the atmosphere and home field advantage super fans of clubs bring to the games. Do you think the NFL would move towards that, where a section of the audience is only for quote-unquote ultras, where they'll lead chants with flags and more? No, I don't think so. I just think it's a different environment, a different vibe, and that came over, obviously, from across the pond, that vibe. And so I just the American vibe and American football it just isn't consumed the same way. Marco brings up a good point here in the replies about the cadence of the game is completely different. And, you know, you don't want people making noise while the team's on offense. You want them making a bunch of noise when the teams are on defense. And I think there is a home field advantage to be gained. And I think certain stadiums do a good job of doing that. I think for the 49ers moving down to Santa Clara, it's not been that quite of a raucous atmosphere. And I think that tends to happen. I wonder what the black hole is going to look like in Las Vegas. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of really inebriated people watching games, but there's going to be a lot of people that are passing through town, a lot of people that aren't, you know, that didn't grow up as Raiders fans in Las Vegas. I think a lot of it, you know, and sometimes the hardcore fan is maybe priced out a little bit with some of the new stadiums. And another thing with as far as Levi's Stadium goes is just with the pure noise, the volume of that stadium isn't going to be as loud as some other stadiums just because of the way it's built, just the acoustics in there. If you look at CenturyLink in Seattle, I mean, it's perfectly constructed to be loud, and they purposefully did that. It's two amphitheaters facing each other, basically, is how that thing's built. And in Levi's Stadium's more open air. It's a little bit more open, and it was designed that way for a reason, because it was supposed to be plopped down in downtown San Francisco, or at least near enough to downtown San Francisco where that space in the stadium, you could look and see downtown and see the buildings and things. And that's why it was designed a certain way. They kept the same design and put it in Santa Clara instead. So I think that's why they decided to do that. Maybe they would have designed the stadium differently, knowing all along it was going to go in Santa Clara and maybe gone for the volume rather than the view. I don't know. But as far as it being like, you know, and I don't know how much of it sensationalized, but the hooligans and gangs of fans together, I think the NFL wants to definitely avoid any sort of gangs of people coming in and being hostile in their stadiums. They've got enough problems going on. They don't want to have any of that happening. Camaro Kyle on Twitter wants to know how Tarvarius Moore is looking at safety. And I don't know. It's only been a couple days since he made that switch. And I think it's probably going to come pretty natural to him since he did play safety in college. He did play a little corner in college early on, I think, as well. But I think he's maybe more suited. I like Moore at safety. And I think if Tarvarius Moore, and we didn't see much of him, he did get a little bit of run last year as a rookie at cornerback. And you can see the athleticism and stuff. I don't know how he took in practice and through camp and how he was looking early in OTAs here at corner. If they thought he was going to be a stud cornerback, I don't think they would make that move or even mess around with him trying to play a little safety just to cover for some bodies right now at OTAs and then move him back to corner. I don't know if they would do that. And it sounds like defensive backs coach Joe Woods thinks he's got a chance to stick at safety rather than corner. Sounds like that's where he believes he should be anyway. So I don't know. That's a big question, Kyle. And I'm interested to see more of him on the field at safety and see him in camp and see him in the preseason and see what kind of a player he looks and see if that athleticism translates and maybe allows them to play a little bit more of that cover three and have that range in center field. You know, and with the secondary, there's just something's been bouncing around in my head and I can't figure out. I get the feeling that Robert Saleh's voice just is not as loud as you would expect someone with the title of defensive coordinator to be with the 49ers, because they bring in Chris Kocurek and now they're running that wide nine front. That wasn't a Saleh thing. Joe Woods comes in, and Robert Saleh in the offseason, they asked him before the draft. And after watching the draft, I thought, okay, well, they didn't add any cover corners, and they didn't, you know, it's like, and they asked Saleh, it's like, oh, no, we're running cover three. I think it was confirmed by either Lynch or Shanahan, yeah, we're going to run cover three. And then, did I call him Robert Woods earlier? Joe Woods comes out and says, and they saw them doing this at OTA practices, that they're going to play more split safety looks, and you're going to see Jaquassi Tartt playing in the box, but also playing some deep safety. And Adrian Colbert has gained 10 pounds, 15 pounds. And I don't think 15 pounds, that might be a little bit much, but 10 pounds. And he's a little bit bulkier and he wants to handle the rigors of playing a little bit in the box as well. So they're going to do the split safety look a little bit now. And that's not really what we've heard. And that's not, I mean, the wide nine front and split safeties in the back, that's not Robert Saleh's defense. That's not what he's bring into town. So that's an interesting situation to monitor there on defense. Who's actually calling the shots there? And it would seem that they're second guessing Robert Saleh in that regard. If they brought in a defensive line coach, brought in a defensive backs coach that are essentially changing the scheme. All right, we've got a lot more to get to, but first I want to tell you guys about our sponsors. This show is brought to you in part by Hotels.com, Grip 6 Belts, and Blue Chew. Guys, do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? Now you can increase your performance and get that extra something, that extra confidence in bed. Listen up, BlueChew.com. That's like blue, the color blue, and chew like you chew it. Blue Chew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill. So you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Now, this isn't just for guys who can't perform. It's for any guy who wants extra function to enhance their performance in the bedroom. Blue Chew is prescribed online and shipped straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor's visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the USA, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. And right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use our promo code LOCKEDON. Just pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code LOCKEDON to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring this podcast. We talked a little bit about the defense and the scheme and how things might be changing a little bit this year for the 49ers. And Michael on Twitter asked the question, Brian, any chance you can touch on the wide nine formation on the podcast? I'm a little concerned about the effect it might have on the run defense. Thank you for the question, Michael. I don't think you should be too concerned. I don't think it's such a massive change. Actually, I think the biggest change to this scheme is that the linebackers have now changed. So you've got those defensive linemen out a little bit wider on the edge. So now the linebacker, so the old Sam linebacker used to be someone who's got contained on the edge because the big end is a little bit more over the tackle. And so that outside linebacker is the contained guy. And so he's maybe sort of like a hybrid defensive end outside linebacker, sort of like a 3-4 outside linebacker would be. And actually, maybe the best way to think of the front seven with the old standard cover three scheme that Robert Saleh brought over is on the weak side of the defense, it's a 4-3. And on the strong side of the defense, it's a 3-4. Basically, you have a 3-4 defensive end, which is the big end, which is a 5 technique. You're lined up over the tackle, and you've got sort of an outside linebacker over there who's a stand-up rusher who can put his hand in the ground on third downs and rush after the quarterback when it's a 4-man front with 2 linebackers behind him, or is more of a stand-up guy in base situations. And now since you have that defensive end that's going to be a little bit kicked out, you know, maybe 12 inches, maybe 18 inches outside of where he would have been lined up before over the tackle. He's going to be outside of the tackle. Now he's the contained guy. He's crashing hard off the edge. So now the 49ers are going to run more 3 standard stack linebackers, they call them, behind the line of scrimmage. So that Sam linebacker is less of a hybrid 3-4 type defensive end style linebacker and more of just a standard linebacker. So now the 49ers going back to where it's 4 defensive linemen, 3 linebackers. So you thought maybe Dee Ford would be that Sam linebacker sometimes because he fits the mold of a 3-4 stand-up sort of a rusher. But that's not going to be the case the way it's being described now. They're going to do that front seven because those guys are going to be outside. So maybe Dee Ford is now someone who can play base end for you. But you've also got some really good run-defending base ends. And I've been talking about how maybe Dee Ford, he's going to be on this field 70% of the time, even if he's just a sub rusher. Maybe that's the best way to keep him fresh and utilize Eric Armstead and Solomon Thomas as one of the defensive ends on the opposite side from Nick Bosa. And those would be your ends on base downs. But the wide nine, I don't think it's going to change that much from a run defense perspective, because basically what you're doing is you're taking the defensive end. You're saying, okay, you move 18 inches further outside from what you used to do. And linebacker guy, you move 18 inches back inside from where you used to be. And so they're just kind of trading spaces there. And the main thing is that it's still about playing fast and hard and violent. And I think those edge players are just going to crash hard from the edge and they want to come. It's not like a finesse scheme. It's not a finesse front. Like, they're crashing hard and putting the offensive linemen in danger. They're putting them on notice basically from jump. And so I think that's the idea behind the wide nine, is they're just coming hard. They're coming fast. You maybe improve that rush angle, but you're also crashing hard against the run and compressing things and pushing things back in to the teeth of the linebackers. Speaking of linebackers, Adam from Facebook has a question about fifth rounder Dre Greenlaw. He says, what are your thoughts on the Niners trying to build Greenlaw in as a safety since he's played the position and he's perfect size for it? And by him not being able to take on blocks on run plays, getting manhandled, wouldn't this be an ideal transition with his speed and lack of depth at safety? I believe this year would be backing the linebackers up as depth, but the following year, could we see the transition? Thanks for the question, Adam. And this is a response to the Scouting Report podcast that I did on Dre Greenlaw, and you can go back and listen to that one if you haven't. And that's just one of the things I noticed with him, is he just can't take on blocks. He doesn't do it well at all. He's not the biggest safety. Not the biggest linebacker. He's a former safety. But my answer to that question would be no. He's already done the transition from safety to linebacker, and the 49ers view him as a linebacker. I think what they want is light, fast, athletic linebackers who can cover. And so I think that's why they like Dre Greenlaw. So what his strengths and weaknesses are right now, what they'll do is probably work on him being stouter against the run. And that's why I think this year he's going to have to work on that a lot. And I don't know if he's going to be able to earn a big spot on base downs. I think it'll be more of a situation where he's playing a lot of special teams as a rookie, and maybe he's a sub-package player and he can cover a little bit with that athleticism. But no, he's a linebacker. He's got some things to work on for sure, but he's a fifth-round pick, too. You're not going to find perfect players necessarily that late on day three, but he's got a chance to stick because he's that style of player that the league is sort of going to, the lighter, faster, more athletic linebackers who can cover because teams are throwing the ball so much. So that's what I see in him, and I think he's definitely still going to have to get bigger and stronger and play the run a little bit more tough, and there's going to be times where he's facing blockers and offensive linemen are going to get to him and tight ends are going to get to him. He's got to take on those blocks, and that's I think that's just the big aspect of his game he's going to have to work on. And if he can, then I think the 49ers really have something. But that's why I don't see him. And he's a fifth rounder. You don't expect fifth rounders to come in and win starting jobs all that often. And I don't think Dre Greenlaw, unless forced into action, is going to be somebody that earns a starting job early in his career. And with Dre Greenlaw, it's not so much that he's not a good tackler and not a good run defender as far as a go get him and go tackle him and go run guys down. He can do all that. It's just from a taking on blocks perspective is something that he was really lacking. And when I watched his tape, he's one of the worst linebackers. As far as people who are draftable linebackers, he was really bad at taking on blocks. Like, he just got washed out really easily, like way too easily. And so that's something he's going to have to clean up. And maybe it's just a mentality thing. Maybe it's more of the way he was coached up. They're like, look, we don't need you banging heads with guys. Go run around and make plays and try to ditch guys and try to sidestep and do whatever you have to do. And guys aren't thumpers like they used to be in the NFL. Gone are the days of the big, slow, 250-pound linebacker that would just crush blockers. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Patrick Willis, and he was only 240 pounds, and he annihilated fullbacks when they came through the hole. I mean, he had some serious collisions. He took on blocks with the best of them, but he had everything else as far as speed and ability to chase people, too. So he had it all. But Dre Greenlaw's definitely not cut from that cloth. You know who the player I think the 49ers hope Dre Greenlaw becomes is Telvin Smith. When he came out of Florida State, he only weighed like 215, 220 pounds. He was really light, really skinny, but he was 6'3". He had the frame to put on a little bit more weight, and I don't know how big Telvin Smith, and actually Telvin Smith is semi-retiring this year because of the pounding his body's taken playing linebacker, but playing that weak side linebacker in that scheme in Jacksonville that Robert Saleh came from. And maybe they see some of that in Dre Greenlaw with that ability to be a former safety that ends up being a linebacker that continues to get bigger, that can just flat go run down ball carriers, that is athletic and is good in coverage with all of that athleticism that comes from being a former defensive back. To Ryan on Twitter, and unfortunately I don't have a good answer for your question, Ryan. He asks, I'm curious what the new strength and conditioning staff is doing differently than the previous group. And I'm right there with you, Ryan. I wish I knew exactly what the different techniques were going to be that the 49ers expect a big turnaround in players being healthy. And maybe one of them is holding everybody out of OTAs that might be a little bit hurt and making sure they don't get hurt further. And maybe that's the aspect of it, is they want more people healthy for camp. And so anybody that's got just a little bit of something going on is being held out. And that's why there's 20 players right now that aren't participating in the offseason program that most of them are supposed to be cleared for camp. And we'll see who actually does get cleared for camp. But that's a great question, Ryan. I think we're going to learn more about that as we go forward. But I don't know the exact techniques of the old staff, and I can't tell you how it's going to differ from the new staff that the 49ers have brought in. And I'll be 100% honest when I say that you guys don't want my layperson's medical opinions on any of this stuff, because, that is not my expertise. Okay, let's step aside momentarily and then finish up this Locked On 49ers Monday mailbag. I've got an email here from Trevor who says, as always, keep up the great work. Your daily podcasts are always helpful to us football addicts to get through this long off season. Well, thank you so much, Trevor. I appreciate that. He says, I was wondering if you'd read a recent article published by PFF that looked into exploring the question of pass rush versus coverage as a better predictor of defensive success. It doesn't come to any sweeping conclusions. Big surprise. Both are important. However, the article does go on to conclude that while pass rush is more stable year to year, teams that have an elite coverage unit and a poor pass rush go on to win 1.5 games more on average than teams with the reverse. I thought this article had some great data-driven talking points, and I just wanted to pass it along to further the pass rush versus coverage discussion. All the best to the family. Thank you, Trevor. And yes, I did read that Pro Football Focus article about pass rush versus coverage. And like you mentioned, they came away with the conclusion that coverage is more important than pass rush, although they both feed off of each other and they're both very important. Behind quarterback, those are the next two most important things. And then obviously blocking for the pass rush would be in there as well. But I came to the conclusion that basically what they're saying is you need a bunch of guys that can cover because teams throw the ball so much now. The path to winning is throwing the ball. So you've got to cover so many guys and there's so many options on the field. So you can't have, like we were talking about, they don't have that 250-pound thumper of a linebacker that can't cover anymore. That guy's being phased out of the NFL. And it's for a reason. And I came away thinking, okay, if I had to, let's say if I had to put a plan together and I had an empty roster and I had to pick players and pick an overall idea of how I wanted to build my roster, quarterback aside, I'd be drafting pass rushers first and higher in the draft, but I would be drafting more numerous defensive backs. So basically it's like, so take the 49ers last year. They got after the quarterback in a total of, you know, just below league average because they were good rushing from the interior, but not as much from the edge. And hopefully they're just great rushing from the interior and the edge now this year. But last year they weren't. And then last year, one guy on the defense graded well in Richard Sherman, and the other guys didn't grade out too well at all. So they got targeted. So that I come away with this idea and looking at the data that PFF had, and I'm not going to argue with most of it, and a lot of it makes a lot of sense. I come away with his whole argument and looking at the data and looking at how teams perform and looking at how the 49ers performed last year. I would say that you can't have that gaping hole on defense in your secondary that teams know they can target. So what I'm saying is you need numbers in the defensive backfield. You need 3, 4, 5 cornerbacks deep on your roster who can cover and they don't become the guy with a target on their back. You need safeties that can cover as well as play the run. You need linebackers that can cover as well as play the run. And so I think that's why you have to throw a ton of resources at those positions. But I would still argue that the way, or at least the way I would go about it, is I would still want the stud pass rusher first, and I would be trying to draft that player because of the value of that guy who's unblockable that wreaks havoc on opposing quarterbacks. I would draft that first, and then rounds 2, 3, 4, I would take cornerback, 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 if that makes any sense. That's the way I would value this thing, and it's not, and obviously they both feed off of each other, but I would want a number of players on defense that can all cover, and you need to be able to cover a slot guy, you need to be able to cover players outside, you need to be able to cover big slot players and tight ends. You need to be able to cover running backs. You have to cover so many people at one time. You need a ton of really good cover guys and good defensive backs and good corners. But having that shutdown guy, that idea is not as prevalent as it used to be in the NFL. You need a ton of good guys, not one good player and then some scrubs on the opposite side. Whereas as far as pass rushers go, you can live with one pretty okay guy on one side if you have the stud guy on the other side, because if you have a couple of mediocre guys that are just pretty good, that's all right, but you would still want that stud pass rusher that affects the game at that level. So that's, if any of what I just said makes sense, I kind of agree with what they're saying, but I also think that it's just different, and I would put resources in a certain way to try to get both, obviously, but I think you put numbers and depth at coverage and numbers at defensive back, and you put high-end assets, big money, and top picks at pass rushers, edge rushers specifically. Let's check back in on Twitter. Only One Hurricane asks, everyone is saying Bosa is as pro-ready as they come. I'm wondering if you think he will have the same issues Defoe had his first few years in the league, turning pressures into sacks. No, Hurricane, I do not think he'll have that same problem. We saw it with Armstead. We saw it with DeForest Buckner. And the reason I don't think we will see it with Nick Bosa is because, well, he's further along in his development as a prospect. That's one thing. Being pro-ready is good, but he has burst. And I think the difference between a pressure and a sack is that closing speed and how quickly you can get there, because those windows sometimes are very quick. You can beat your man and the ball's still out. And so I think Bosa just has that little extra burst, and that's why you need that speed off the edge. You need the guys that can close on the quarterback. You need the guys who can corral someone like Russell Wilson, when he does that magical thing he does where he gets out of the pocket and then makes a play happen, you need a guy who can close on him. And I wouldn't put Nick Bosa on an elite level of athleticism or anything like that, but he does have burst, and he gets off the line quickly, and he can get into a quarterback quickly. And when he's out there in space, he can run guys down too as well, as will D. Ford, obviously, has more top-end speed and ability to run a quarterback down. So, and when you got Kyler Murray now in the division, and he's another one of those guys that can move around quite a bit. So you need that athleticism on the edge that can finish the job and can close on quarterbacks. And I think both D. Ford and Nick Bosa can do that. And we saw his brother, and they're not the same person, Joey and Nick, but you saw Joey Bosa come in the league and wreak havoc right away. And I expect the same from Nick Bosa. And Bosa will probably have some welcome to the NFL moments, and he might have some trouble against some of the best tackles in the league early on in his career, like a lot of guys have. But I think one thing he will definitely do out of the gate is he will feast on bad tackles, because he has that combination of burst and power and technique. And if you put a bad tackle out there, I think he's just going to run through him like he did pretty much everybody he faced in college. I got to read this question from Scott. I don't know if it's the first, but it might be the first one I've read. We have a long snapper question. So thank you, Scott, for getting this pertinent question out there for all the listeners. He says, what are the plans for long snapper while our number one guy is suspended? And Scott, how dare you? I can't believe you don't remember Colin Holba, who the 49ers picked up to cover for Kyle Nelson. And yes, Kyle Nelson is suspended, and Colin Holba is around, and he's going to be the guy who fills in for the 49ers, formerly a Pittsburgh Steelers sixth-round pick, former Jacksonville Jaguar, and current San Francisco 49er. And when Kyle Nelson comes back, I assume that means Holba will be waived, and Nelson will resume his place as the 49ers long snapper, but who knows? Maybe Holba will do enough to hold Kyle Nelson off. Well, let's finish this off with Keith, and we talked a lot about the linebackers here and how that front seven is going to look. He asks, who will be starting linebackers if D. Ford is now on the D-line? Smith, Lee, and Warner does not intimidate me. I don't think Quan will be ready to start the season. They're saying that Quan Alexander is going to be ready in training camp. And if he's ready to go in camp, he's going to be able to start the season. I still have my doubts like you do, Keith. I'm not sure when he's going to come back, and I wouldn't put all of my hopes into Quan being there and being ready to go in week one. But it sounds like that's what they believe. And they didn't give him all that money because they thought he wasn't going to be ready to go this year. And obviously he's the guy they plan on being there as the weak side linebacker next to Warner, who's in the middle. And so now you have the rookie in Dre Greenlaw, you have the veteran in Malcolm Smith, and you have the veteran but athletic and sort of the in-between guy in Elijah Lee. And I would think that it's going to be Smith for sure at strong side linebacker to start. You got Mark Zacha there as well. But if everybody's healthy, I think it's going to be Smith with Warner in the middle, Quan Alexander at will. But it looks like all three of those linebacker positions are going to be a little bit more interchangeable this year, especially with that strong side backer being more of your standard outside linebacker. If Quan Alexander doesn't make it back, then Elijah Lee is most likely going to be the first man up at will. And we'll see how Dre Greenlaw looks and see how his development happens. And maybe he'll have a chance to be in that rotation as well, especially on passing downs using his athleticism. But I think Elijah Lee is going to be the first man up at weak side linebacker, and I think that Zacha would be the first man up at strong side linebacker. All right, that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, who got involved in this mailbag, and my apologies to those questions I did not answer, but there will be more questions answered on this week's Winky Wednesday with Mr. Nick Winkler, and I will talk to you guys tomorrow right here on Locked On 49ers.